Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Vayigash. Also this week, we're approaching the end of the calendar year, the fiscal year, so please consider a donation to Pardes. Your donation of any amount will make a real difference. Your donation can be made anytime online at www.donate.pardesusa.org. Thank you very much. Pardes is a small institution, and your donation will make a real difference. Thank you again. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Vayigash. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes and serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is Parshat Vayigash. Today I would like to examine one verse in the parsha, a verse which on the one hand seems to be very, very straightforward, but as we will see, is quite ambiguous and lends itself to multiple interpretations. Chapter 46, verse 29. And Joseph fastened his chariot, and he went up towards Israel his father to the land of Goshen. And he appeared before him, and he fell on his neck, and he cried on his neck further. The simple reading of the verse is that Joseph is the subject throughout. Joseph fastens, Joseph goes up, Joseph appears, Joseph falls on the neck, Joseph cries. The problem with this straightforward explanation is that it is counterintuitive. We would have expected that Jacob would be crying, and there is no mention of it. When we turn back to chapter 37, verse 34, after Jacob is presented with Joseph's coat and is asked by his sons to recognize it, and Jacob proclaims that, yes, this is the son of my son. This is the coat of my son. A wild beast has torn him apart. In verse 34, we're told, and Jacob tears up his garments. He puts sackcloth on his loins. He mourns for his son for many days. And all of his sons and daughters arise to comfort him, but he refuses to be comforted. And he says, I will go down to my son as a mourner in the grave. And his father cried for him. And if we look earlier in our parsha, when Jacob is informed by the brothers that Joseph is still alive, in chapter 45, verse 26, in the middle of the verse we're told, and his heart came to a stop because he couldn't believe them. And then at the end of verse 27, when they tell him all the words of Joseph, the spirit of Jacob comes back to life. And then Israel says, my son Joseph is still alive. Let me go and see him before I die. When we combine these verses, it is clear to us that Jacob was traumatized by the loss of Joseph. And when Jacob hears that Joseph is still alive, we can only imagine the tremendous surge of joy that came upon him. And therefore, it would be natural for Jacob to be crying when at long last he sees his beloved son. In fact, because of these considerations, Nachmanides says that it must be that Jacob was the one who was crying. And as the clincher, Nachmanides says, it is a known fact that who would you expect would be crying? An old man who finds his son alive after having despaired, lost all hope, been in mourning, or the young son who rules? And of course, the conclusion is, the old man who you would expect would be crying. Let me note that in our verse, it only mentions crying in the singular. And this is especially striking, since in a previous story, when Jacob finally sees Esav, after many years of having been separated, after being terrified as to how this encounter will eventually turn out, we are told in chapter 33, verse 4, that Esav ran towards him, and he hugged him, and he fell on his neck, and he kissed him, and they cried. Although Esav is the subject of all of the different actions, the verse ends with both of them crying. And that's what we would have expected in our verse. The fact that it speaks of only one person crying creates a dilemma. And the Ramban, basing him on himself, on his psychological insight, says, of course it must be that the old man is crying. It is interesting that Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, who lived over 600 years after the Ramban, comes to the exact opposite conclusion. He says Joseph was crying. Jacob was not crying. Joseph still had tears streaming, but Jacob was dried up. Joseph continued to cry, even after Jacob entered into a conversation with him. Jacob, who had lived for many years alone and crying for his son, now could no longer cry. On the other hand, Joseph, who during those 20 years had gone through many experiences, who was not open, who did not allow himself to express his feelings of yearning, at this moment allowed all those emotions of 22 years that were pent up to just burst forth at a moment. Jacob at that moment became Israel, and Joseph at that moment continued to cry. Rabbi Hirsch has a very good leg to stand on. When we look at Joseph's reactions throughout the story, when he sees his brothers, we see how he is overcome with emotion. In our parsha, when Joseph finally reveals himself to the brothers, note the language. It's very similar to what we have in our verse. Joseph falls on their neck. Joseph cries. This is chapter 45, verse 14 and 15. First he falls on Binyamin, cries on him, kisses his brothers, cries upon them. Not only that, but in that very same section, after he reveals himself to his brothers in chapter 45, verse 3, the first thing which comes out of his mouth is my father still alive? And one can see throughout the section how preoccupied he is to once again see his father. So it is not at all clear that the old man would be crying, when in fact we see that Joseph is overcome with tears. We see that Joseph does fall on the necks of his brothers and kisses them. We see that Joseph, from beginning to end, is concerned, is his father still alive? And therefore, it could be very natural to assume that when he finally sees Yaakov, all of the emotions that he has suppressed for the last 22 years burst forth in a stream of tears. But why would Jacob not be crying? It's true, you could make the argument that Rabbi Hirsch wants to say, that he's teared out. He's been crying so long that at this critical moment, he is somehow beyond tears. Rashi has a very interesting explanation. Rashi says that in fact it was Joseph who was crying. But then the question which we had, but what about Jacob? Why isn't Jacob crying? And Rashi's answer is, based on a rabbinic comment, that at that moment, Jacob was reciting the Shema. At face value, it seems to be a most unusual type of explanation. And to put it in very concrete terms, couldn't Jacob have found another time to say the Shema? As we know, the time for saying the Shema covers a span of the first 3 hours of the morning. Jacob could have very easily said the Shema before he met Joseph. Why at that moment is Jacob saying the Shema? And there's a very interesting explanation given by one of the commentaries on Rashi, the Be'er Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Horowitz, who says the following, that as Jacob is approaching Joseph, he feels the love swell up in him, the joy, a love and joy that know no bounds, as if there is nothing which can compare to the love which he has for his son. And at that moment, there was a certain awakening which Jacob had. And perhaps I would add an awakening that may have called into question how he has spent the last 22 years of his life. Jacob begins to realize that ultimately the core of his life, the core of his being, is God. Ultimately, the love of his life should be God. How is it possible that he feels such ultimate love towards his son? And at that moment, Jacob made a conscious decision. Perhaps one could even say a decision to show in a demonstrative way that ultimately his relationship with God takes precedence over his relationship with his son. As much as he loves his son, as joyous as he is to finally see him, he needs to affirm the primacy of his relationship with God. If you will, this was Jacob's Akedah, where he needed to show the prioritization of his value system, that ultimate love should only be shown to God. I mentioned a moment ago that there may have been a certain reawakening. When Joseph disappeared, Jacob felt that his life had ended. And the image we have in the verses which I read earlier, he tears his garments, he puts on sackcloth, he refuses to be comforted. His life stops. For all intents and purposes, Jacob has spent the last 22 years being the living dead. He has stopped functioning. And perhaps he realizes the mistake he made. It is true that it may be more complicated than what I'm presenting. Because in fact, it could be that Jacob refuses to be comforted because he feels responsible for the death of his son. He was the one who sent him. It could also be that Jacob, in the back of his mind, suspects that his sons may have in fact killed Joseph. And if so, then he has not only lost Joseph, but he has lost all of his sons. His whole life's work, which was to create a family that will become the Jewish nation, has totally fallen apart. So that one can make the argument that when Jacob hears that Joseph is alive, he's excited not only about his son, but he feels that in fact, his life work, his life's work, is intact. That in fact, the family will now be reconciled and be able to move forward to become the Jewish nation. Hence, it would be not far-fetched to think that he would cry at that moment. I have tried to show that a simple verse may in fact be complex. There may be many, many considerations to bring to bear. And in fact, this is a classic example of what we generally call Elu ve'elu divrei Elohim chayim. These and these are the words of the living God. We can make out a great case for Joseph crying. We can also make out a great case for Jacob crying. If Jacob is the one who is crying, then we could easily say that Joseph, as a young man, as the ruler of Egypt, does not cry so readily, as the Ramban wants to say. And if, in fact, it is Joseph who is crying, then maybe Jacob is beyond tears. Maybe Jacob needs to affirm his relationship with God at the very moment when he sees his son, so that he reminds himself that ultimately his love of God comes before his love, the love of his son. I leave it to you to judge which one resonates better. I would like to think, in the end, that both of them cried. And maybe I would suggest that although it doesn't say they cried in the plural, perhaps at this moment the focus of the text is on Joseph, Joseph who is crying, and only in the next verse do we hear about Jacob, where Jacob then says, I can now die, after seeing you, that you are alive. And as I mentioned a moment ago, Jacob is saying this not only because of his tremendous love of Joseph, but he's saying this as Yisrael. Yisrael, who is very much aware of Jewish destiny, who now feels that seeing Joseph alive, the family is now intact. The family can now go on to become the nation. Jacob has accomplished what he needed to do, and now his sons can take it a bit further. At the very least, I think it is worth contemplating how one deals with a situation where there may be a conflict of interest in terms of the roles they play. Sometimes it could be a conflict between your personal life, your private life, and your public life. Sometimes it could be, as we have here, your relationship to family versus your relationship to God. It is true that ultimately all of these should be complementary, but there are certain moments when one takes precedence over the other. This is what we are witnessing in our verse, the tension, whether it be from the perspective of Jacob or whether it be from the perspective of Joseph. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send your comments to podcasts@pardesusa.org. And the URL for a donation, again, is www.donate.pardesusa.org. Thanks again, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.